Warning, long episode.
We here at Drink, Drink, Drunk Podcast acknowledge that there is far too much information to cover in 1, 10, or even 100,000 shows. We aim to address as many topics and terms as possible, continually adding to an ever-expanding glossary as we progress. We fully expect to research great volumes of material and enjoy great volumes of palliatives, tonics, and of course, beer. We also embrace that fans and foes of the show will engage in aiding us to confirm, correct, and complete what we say as fact or falsehood. We ask only that you keep it honest and keep it responsible. Sincerely, the Fun Police.
Welcome to episode number 4 of Drink, Drink, Drunk,
the podcast.
This week we talk about totalitarian governments, all right. We also ask the question.
Yeah, my name is Ryan. How many shots of Hennessy will it take to take the bitch back to my house?
Plus, drinks of the episode, reviews, booze news, an interview with Miguel Chavez from the hole in the wall. All this, and don't call me Shirley. Coming up next on Drink, Drank, Drunk, the podcast.
Welcome to Drink, Drank, Drunk, the podcast. This
is Jason.
And this is Tom.
Saying drink something.
So, Jason, the eternal question, how many shots of Hennessy does it take to bring a bitch back to my place?
Well, you don't want to give her too many in case she's too heavy, but if she's too heavy already, then you can just go for it. What about you, Tom?
Well, my only question really is, who drinks Hennessy by the shot?
Yeah, I mean, you should just sideswig that.
Sideswig it or put it in a chalice. Go big or go home. Well, I guess that's part of the question is to go home.
I guess the end result is always...
just fuck it. As many as it takes. Does she like Hennessy? Because then it may take a while. Anyway. Did that answer the question?
Yeah.
Yes, the booze news. Famous news section of Drink, Drink, Drunk podcast.
Absolutely.
I'll start off today. We found an article about the most expensive wine in the world.
Oh, boy.
It's like an episode of Honeymooners or something. Oh, yeah. Oh, geez. Oh,
wow.
So an Australian winemaking company, winery, called Penfolds, released a 2004 Block 42 with limited edition Ampoule or Ampouli or something.
Whatever.
Yeah, it's glass. Basically, what that means is the wine bottle has no cork, and this wine was cased completely in glass.
This just sounds Australian.
Each of these limited edition bottles is expected to sell for roughly $170,000 U.S. money.
Wow.
Now, do you think that's going to cover your expenses for your trip to the ER from all the broken bits of glass in your wine?
Oh, absolutely. But I don't think Australians do that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they have free healthcare or something down there anyway.
They wouldn't use that.
I don't know. Fuck it. Jason, your turn.
Well, in beer news... Oregon craft beer is awesome.
I think everybody kind of knew that. That's not news.
Well, they are a little more awesome as they have strengthened our local economy. One beer at a time.
You know what? I stand behind it. I don't even need to hear the logic.
Well, here's the logic. According to the Oregon Brewers Guild, OBG, they have contributed nearly $2.5 billion to the state's economy, 2011.
How much have they contributed to the costs of people's livers having to be transplanted? How much have they actually cost the economy, though, sending everybody to the hospital from over-drinking?
Don't care. Because the Oregon Brewers Guild reports also that their 110 brewing companies have crafted more than 1 million barrels of beer.
Ugh. I think I could do that in a day.
Yeah, me too. Which was a 7.5% increase from last year.
Wow, that means, let's do the math here, 7.5%. That's as much alcohol as in a beer.
That's even higher than last year. So Oregon, pretty cool.
Yeah, Oregon is pretty cool. Frost brewed, in fact.
They are so cool, in fact.
How cool are they?
They are 7.5% cooler than they were last year. Hey-oh.
That's because they stepped up their production rate, right?
It's true. And they also added over 600 jobs in their state's brewing companies.
No stymieing the economy with drinking there.
No, they are adding billions of dollars, millions of booze, and jobs.
Millions of booze. That's some good drink, drank, drunk math there, guys. Booze news. Out.
And now it's time for the beer of the episode.
Uni Brew 17. Grande Reserve.
Jason, what kind of beer you got for us today?
Well, we have Una Brew or Unibrow.
17 Grand Reserve, I hear.
Yes, it is the 17 Grand Reserve. Very, very tasty, extra strong, dark ale.
There's a lot of words to describe this delicious drink.
A lot of words indeed, but that must mean that it's good. All right, so just to dive into, you know, exactly what a Belgian strong dark ale is, they're basically just, you know, really alcoholic and just kind of bold in your face, but they're very complex as well.
So what you're saying basically is that they act tough, but really they're pretty sweet underneath.
Yes, they are.
Delicate.
They're delicate, yeah.
So on the outside it says it's 17 Grand Reserve. What does that mean?
All that basically means is that you can age it.
Like, what do you mean age?
Well,
age like how?
This is the type of awesome beer where, you know, you could put it in your fridge, and since it's bottle fermented, you can age it for, it says, 5 to 8 years, you know, and it'll just get
so
better.
It just gets sweeter and smoother? Do you know what that does?
It just, with age, it develops a smoother...
So going back to you saying that it has a tough exterior, but a delicate interior.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely alcoholic, but it's a softy on the inside. Has feelings. It's very complex.
It's very good. I like a beer with baggage. Tell me more.
Me too. With the color on this one, it has a very dark amber color.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's
so
called a dark strong ale, is that what you
said,
right?
Yeah. So it's got dark in the color.
It
for
makes
sure.
sense now.
But you know, it's also sort of a cream colored lacing, you know, on the glass.
Sure.
And the leaves.
It's gonna have like a creamy head.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot of the beers that we try.
Opaque.
So when you say opaque, you're not just talking about how the foamy head is opaque, but the beer itself is kind of cloudy because, it's, like you said, it's an aged...
Yeah, just the overall...
Sorry, bottle fermented, my bad.
Yeah, just the overall clarity of the beer.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the head has a very rich beige foam to it.
I noticed when we were doing the tasting, the effervescence was sustained, I think is the word I'm thinking, or just it didn't go away when you let
that's a good way to put it. Yes. I mean, the bubbles themselves are very fine and small,
and
you know, kinda, moderately sized bubbles.
Right.
The bubbles were very fine.
It's the smooth, that aids in the smooth, silky interior, right?
Yeah.
It's feelings. Those,
are
the feelings of the
feelings.
Beer.
Yeah.
Good. I'm learning.
Good.
I'm learning.
Well, on to more learning. We move on to the nose. Very nosy beer all up in my face. And it had a very roasty, malty sort of smell to it.
Yeah, I noticed it had this kind of spiciness to it.
Yes.
And, you know, we both said fairly strong flavor of vanilla.
Yeah.
And that comes from what it's aged in, too.
Both spice and vanilla were very apparent. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's delve more into the taste of this beer.
Ah, yes, the taste. Intensely malty. That's a good description of this flavor.
Also tasted hints of chocolate, cocoa kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Oak from the barrels it's aged in.
Yeah, oaky finish for sure. It was subtle, but it was there. Like I say, intensely malty. And yeah, pleasant lingering as well.
Our food recommendation on this is a complex thing as well, like maybe a McDonald's Big Mac with lots of layers.
Yeah, or if they have tacos.
Now it's time for Not Beer! Sazerac Rye Whiskey. 6 year vintage.
It's time for a good old-fashioned Sazerac. Yum! Delicious.
Mmm!
Tasty! Educate us more on Sazerac Rye Whiskey, Jason.
Well, Sazerac from New Orleans. Been around since 1850 and is actually a rather family-operated company, if you will.
Rather family?
Yeah, rather family. Family Rathers.
I'm Dan Rather. I hear it's a privately held company. All the ticker tapes say that this is a private family-owned company.
Their industry is drink.
So were the owner's names Sazerac then, since it's a family-owned company?
Actually, the owner's name was Thomas H. Handy.
Where'd they get the name from? Well, I'll tell you what I think is the story. Sometime in the mid-1800s, this guy named Taylor sold his bar, which was called the Merchants Exchange Coffee House.
Why would he do that? Beats me.
That's a good question. Google it. Anyway, so Taylor went into the imported liquor business, and one of the things he imported was a cognac branded Sazerac de Forge et Fils.
Ooh, I heard Sazerac in there.
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay.
In due time. Around the same time, another guy named Aaron Bird took over the coffee house and changed the name to the Sazerac House, where he served Sazerac cocktails using this cognac, mm-hmm. the Sazerac de Forge et Fils. In these cocktails, he started using the local druggist's bitters, house-made bitters.
The Pachaud.
Pachaud?
From what's-his-face? Antoine.
Antoine Pachaud. Pachaud? Pachaud?
Pachaud? Pachaud?
I don't know how to pronounce it. You'll have to go to Louisiana to figure it out. Anyway, the Sazerac House ended up changing hands a whole bunch of times, and Thomas Handy eventually took it over. Thomas Handy...
was a handy guy?
Well, let me tell you how handy Mr. Thomas was. Eventually, Thomas Handy stopped using the cognac that he was importing because there was some grape disease that I can't pronounce.
Something going on there.
Something Foxalicosephoria.
Definitely.
Killed a bunch of the grapes, and so he started using rye whiskey as the main base ingredient. Eventually, I believe he started distilling his own and used the Sazerac name, just pure and simple Sazerac rye whiskey. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, of course, the company goes on to, you know, all its other various types of products, whiskey, vodka, gin, tequila, mm-hmm. et cetera.
Other delicious things.
And that's that. Except for, obviously, 2009 when the Sazerac brand decided to make their main focus of the company bourbon.
Correct. According to our research, there are only two major Sazerac branded whiskeys out there right now, an 18-year-old version and a 6-year-old version, both at 90 proof.
Louisiana, sounds about right.
Correct. So Sazerac Rye, the tasting. Thoughts, Jason?
For the most part, it was pretty awesome, actually. I've mm-hmm. never had Sazerac, the whiskey, mm-hmm. and it had some spice to it.
Yeah.
It was good.
Really smooth, interesting flavor. I don't want to use the word complex too much in this episode, but that's very much... That's very much what I felt about this whiskey. It had a lot of different kinds of flavors in it, mostly the spice, though, and that's prominent in most rye whiskeys. Initially, it has kind of a bite. But
still has that bite.
It's a rye whiskey, so you're going to expect that. Most ryes are going to be spicy.
I just had a shot of Sazerac.
It has a very long-lasting linger. You say it still kind of bites?
Yeah, I mean, it's got that spice there. It's just lingering, like, kind of the top back of my mouth, and mm-hmm. it definitely lingers. It's not going away.
It's not. It really does burn. Like, it's been about 30 seconds now. Not just the harshness of the rye whiskey is lasting, but also the smooth and creamy flavor of the vanilla in there.
Definitely.
It's still there 30 seconds in.
Complex.
And I realize we just talked about how long this thing lasted for a really long time.
Very long.
But that should be a testament to how good the flavor is. What do you do with Sazerac other than talk about how long the flavor lasts? That's right. Mix it with a bunch of stuff.
And drink it.
And now it's time for the hard drink. The Sazerac cocktail.
This week's hard drink is, of course, a drink made with Sazerac rye whiskey. We call it, guess what? The Sazerac cocktail.
Yes.
Sazerac cocktail. It's background burping. The Sazerac cocktail is a New Orleans variation on the old-fashioned cognac-based drink, like we talked about before. We're going to focus on the most traditional version that we could find of this drink. This one includes using Peychaud's bitters specifically, and instead of using an absinthe or other herbal liqueurs, there's one called Herb Saint that they use specifically.
And just to clarify on Peychaud's bitters, it's actually, it's slightly different than the Angostura bitters that you're pretty much used to in most of these cocktails. Mm-hmm. And the basic difference is it's lighter, sweeter, and has a little more floralness to it.
The biggest difference between Peychaud's and the now near ubiquitous Angostura bitters is that Peychaud's offers a little bit more of an herby, sort of licorice-y scent to it. A little more floral.
Yeah, or I'd say a lot more floral, and that's mainly based on from where it comes from, which is, I forget the plant name. It's like gentian.
Sure.
Sure.
No, it's okay to say,
I'm no plant expert.
Yeah. We're not botanists here, but I think it's called gentian.
Gentian.
Gentian. New words every single day. Anyway, the other main ingredient we mentioned, Herb Saint, was used because for a long time in the United States, absinthe was outlawed. So this was indeed their kind of go-to instead of the illegal.
Yeah. So by default, that was the traditional way to make a Sazerac cocktail.
And now any proper Sazerac is made using specifically Sazerac rye, specifically Herb Saint, and yep, specifically Peychaud's bitters. In order to make the traditional Sazerac, which is, by the way, the official drink of New Orleans.
And NASCAR. And the Super Bowl.
You're supposed to have two old-fashioned glasses, both chilled. You start with 2 ounces of Sazerac rye, 3 dashes of Peychaud's bitters, 1 sugar cube or 1 teaspoon of simple sugar syrup, and a splash of absinthe or Herb Saint. Now what we're going to do is, first of all, we're going to take 1 old-fashioned glass that's been chilled or packed with ice in order to make it cold. Mm-hmm. That's what ice does. That was a little redundant. And you're going to take a regular unchilled old-fashioned glass for mixing.
This is a lot of work so far.
I know. 2 glasses and some ice.
Anyways.
In the non-chilled glass, you're going to put the sugar or the simple syrup, the dashes of bitters, and mix them up. And then you're going to pour in your 2 ounces of rye, swirl it around a bit so it gets mixed. You're going to take the chilled glass, dump out the ice, take the Herb Saint, swirl it around in that chilled glass so it coats the edges, dump out the excess, or drink it, take the mixture in your warm glass, and pour it into the now chilled and coated glass. Everybody got that?
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of work, but all you have to think is everything except the Herb Saint or absinthe in one glass, and then the absinthe in the other glass.
Perfect. Then you take your mixture, throw it in the chilled glass, put on a twist of lemon, and enjoy.
And that's what we did.
When Jason and I tried making this drink, we didn't have any ice to begin with, and we were just going to forge ahead into wild territory, but then we realized that would be a horrifying mistake.
Yeah, we were trying to wing it, you know, in this recording studio, but we learned our lesson, and
so we ran and got ice.
And that horrifying lesson is don't ever be ill-prepared when you're making a drink. And by saying that, I mean we didn't have really anything to make this. We had the ingredients and a cocktail shaker. We didn't even have glasses or ice. Almost skimped on the ice.
We almost didn't have the lemon rind either.
But we gave in and at least bought ice.
We gave in to logic, went and bought some ice, and we did make a pretty tasty drink, if I do say so myself.
Yeah.
So upon first glance, the Sazerac cocktail, once it's been made, is, guess what? The color of rye whiskey.
At least from what we can gather in the cocktail shaker, as it was not clear.
We're assuming that the Sazerac cocktail was the color of rye whiskey. But since we made it in an Opaquois cocktail shaker.
Opaquois, for sure.
That means not see-through. We couldn't really tell what color it was, but it tasted delicious.
It did indeed taste delicious, actually. I'm not going to lie. I was a little hesitant on the Herb Saint, but it really panned out.
Sure, I agree with you. I wasn't really familiar with Peychaud's bitters either, and that kind of threw me off with the herbal undertones being mixed with Herb Saint, which is basically herbs, and having all that mixed together was kind of, well, it was downright scary.
Yeah.
But I thought we were ruining good whiskey.
Yeah, but overall, I mean, this drink really is quite genius because it has like this overall, you know, the complexity of the vanilla and the spiciness of the whiskey.
Sure.
But it goes in another direction with the floralness of the herb saying, and it's just all over the place. And
it really is, and you don't really think about it when you, until you, I should say, we overthought it before we drank it, because it is kind of a daunting task to see these ingredients, to think of these ingredients mixed together. But truly, once the drink is made, there are a few drinks finer than a proper Sazerac.
It's definitely among my top picks now.
Mm-hmm. It's a good old-fashioned style cocktail. In fact, dating from the mid-1850s means it's truly one of the grandfathers of the cocktail.
One of the originals.
I feel like the bitters kind of countered the spiciness of the rye and almost accentuated the vanilla, the sweetness or the smoothness of the drink.
I'm going to quote Matt from our last episode by saying that the herbaceousness of this drink is very much in, just as important as the overall spiciness.
I agree with you. In fact, I would even go so far as to say the audaciousness of the herbaceousness makes this drink.
Pure tastiness.
Jason, on a scale to drunkable or not drunkable, what would you rate this drink?
I'm going to say drunkable.
Roasty Toasty here with your fun fact of the episode. Hey, did you know that a closed bottle of whiskey can be kept for more than 100 years, and you'll still be good? So raid your parents' liquor cabinet and grab that sealed Jameson from Christmas of 87.
That was Roasty Toasty's fun fact of the episode. Thanks for sticking around, folks.
Now we go to the field with Jason and Tom for an interview with Miguel. Take it away, guys.
Fuck it. Let's do it.
Yep.
Why not?
So,
well, good morning.
Yep.
Cheers.
We'll do another cheers here before we get rolling.
Cheers and a good morning to all. To all a good morning.
So, Miguel, because you just met Jason, introduce yourself. Tell us where you're from.
I'm from Oxnard, man. You know where that's at?
What?
Do you know where that's at?
No.
It's by the beach.
The beach.
It fucking sucks.
That definitely worked for this episode.
I'm so glad to not be there anymore. You know, I feel bad for everyone else that's still stuck there. Did you guys see the movie Young Adult?
Yeah.
Remember that scene where Charlize Theron is just trashed at the party and she's all like, I'm better than you.
Yeah.
Every single one of
and
you.
And then she throws up.
Exactly. I can imagine that being my 10-year anniversary, my 10-year high school graduation.
Wearing a dress and yelling I'm better than you.
Yes. And then puking in the middle of everything. Be like, fuck you.
That's the key part,
and
though.
Fuck you. And I've always wanted to fuck you.
So you hate Oxnard. Is your hate for Oxnard or a love for something else? What brought you up here?
No, I was broken. My friend offered his couch.
Oh. So Miguel came up here because he hated Oxnard.
I came up here for a couch. I was broken. I needed somewhere to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And hey, I lucked out. My friend gave me his, you know what? Actually, off subject.
Mm-hmm.
I was supposed to move up here on January 9th, and Brant Bjork announced a solo show on January 9th. So I'm like, well, it looks like I'm going to move up on the 10th.
Right.
Yeah.
So your occupation is a bartender at what bar?
I'm at the Hole in the Wall Saloon, 1369 Folsom, formerly known as Cornholes.
That's what it was called, really?
It was a sex club in the 80s called Cornholes. We actually have a poster of it up on the wall. I can go into descriptive detail what it is, but, you know, for...
Come on down and check it out.
Yeah.
What you mean.
Yeah, exactly. Along with all the other art on the wall. It's basically a huge art project for my boss. Yep. And what a fabulous job he does.
It looks like it. When you walk in, there's just a whole bunch of kitsch all over the walls. And when I say kitsch, I mean like very loosely. Like there's a lot of crazy art and stuff on
there. Well, there's actually, I believe, a method to the madness. Mm-hmm. I'd have to walk you through the whole thing. But, you know, as to my understanding, everything's laid out
I
where
felt
it
like
is
everything was in order when I was in there.
Yeah. No,
like it was chaotic, but it didn't feel like... It felt like everything was in its
There's
like,
a purpose.
Ways.
Yeah.
I mean, the Hole in the Wall, I'm going to say it used to be a dive bar.
Mm-hmm.
It was a dive bar back when it was on 8th Street because the whole fucking building was decrepit. I hear stories from customers about like people going through the floor.
Oh, wow.
For years. And this is even directly from my boss. For years. The toilets didn't flush through into pipes. So, you know, piss and shit would sit underneath the building.
Sounds like the
80s. Everything smell. And, you know, and I found it fascinating. It was pointed out to me that, like, you know, like, all these people came to it and was like, ooh, you have this little kitschy dive bar. It's like, ooh, it is what it is. But it's like, you know, you didn't have to work there. You didn't have to be there all that time.
I am in awe of this. Like, that would drive me batty.
Would it?
Working there, yeah.
I feel like what it is now is, like, the essence of what it used to be, and it's
clean.
No, but it's clean.
It's like, cleaned. Yeah. It has the same, I believe it, I feel it has the same vibe.
Same motif.
Minus the fact that it probably was in a shithole location. Before.
Plumbing Works.
Yes, the Plumbing Works.
And there was your softball.
I think the common word here is shit.
So what, you worked at another bar before this, though, that was owned by the same people.
Yeah, that was the Eagle Tavern. That was one of the best bars in the city.
Care to go into that a little?
The Eagle was like the gay zeitgeist, except it wasn't overrun by a bunch of fucking Nelly queens who wanted to hear Lady Gaga all day.
Yeah.
It had a wonderful patio. It had a great atmosphere. Music was fantastic. Thursday night shows. You know, it was one of the best bars in the city.
Did they also have any type of, like, pitcher specials in certain...
What kind of bar do you think this is?
Was it special?
It was a great space. They had a DJ booth. Like, it was amazing. They used to let me come in there and DJ. And, like, you know, just fucking... endless amounts of CDs. You're just like sitting there like, what do I want to listen to next?
So Miguel, you're a bartender. What's your favorite part about being a bartender?
I get paid to listen to music.
Mm-hmm. You say it like you don't know.
No, that's really what it is. That's the best thing about bartending.
Cool.
At my job.
Excellent.
Is I get paid to listen to music.
I like that.
I mean, I listen to people. I you know, making a drink isn't fucking rocket science.
Yeah.
You know?
But when it comes down to the end of the day,
you are
paid to listen to music.
You are a scientist.
Not at all. I just sit there and just like, oh, this song's awesome, or this song is awesome, or what do I think of this one, or what do I think of this one?
Or are you going to make the playlist?
Well, even then, I'm wondering, like, how does this come off? Or does this work well? I don't, like, today I played her Fear Factory song. I'm like, you know, I will never play this ever, ever, ever again. Because you just know it just was totally wrong.
Didn't work for the situation.
Did not work for it. Will never work for that situation, yeah, ever, under any circumstance.
You know,
so
even
that's
if,
special because, you know, it was like you had your little moment there.
I
like,
figured it out.
That moment of clarity, yeah.
But there was still one guy that walked down the middle of the song, and I'm just like, he probably left because his song sucks.
I don't think he left because of the music at a bar. Have you ever left because of that?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Which bar? Do you remember which bars,
yes,
you were at? Where?
It was the bar next door to us. Actually, I've left out of two bars for the exact same reason.
At Powerhouse?
I was at the Powerhouse, and I don't remember exactly which day it was.
Do you remember which song?
Yes, I do. You see, being from the beach in Southern California, and, you know, actually appreciating music besides, like, whatever shoved down your goddamn throat, we had all those stupid-ass fucks who felt it was okay to be in this really shitty, shitty cover band.
Mm-hmm.
And and they would torture me. And not just me, but many of us. They would torture us.
Literally.
Literally by playing
whips and canes,
snippets of this band's songs. The different one just constantly throughout, like, lunch period. And, like, you know, forever in my head, I have instilled the first, like, 35 seconds of these each individual, like, tunes, and it's awful.
It's very much on a personal level.
You know what? And it's my goal one day to own a bar, this is one of the biggest perks ever, is so that I could ban this band from ever being played, to the point where, like, if someone came in and played it, they would be fired.
Wow.
Okay, so going further with that.
Well, I walked into the Powerhouse one day, and I was talking to one of my coworkers, and we were just sitting there having a good time, and I just ordered a fresh beer, and I'm like, yeah, I think after this one, I'm going to go back to the hole, and then Santeria by Sublime came on, and once that came on, I immediately downed my beer, put my glass down,
there it went,
waved goodbye, and exited within
there
about 25
went.
Seconds.
Anybody ready for another shot of Macallan?
Yeah, why not?
Yeah, why not? Good servers. Alright. So now that we've gotten to know Miguel a little bit, we're going to start hitting with our five standard questions. You ready?
You don't know me.
You have the luxury
talking about. You don't have the luxury. You don't know me.
You have the luxury. You have the luxury of being the first person to say that on our show. Miguel.
It's not about us knowing you.
It's knowing me, knowing you.
You guys wanted to get to know me.
It's knowing me, knowing you.
You're not even trying to get in my pants.
What, no one here's an ABBA fan?
No.
Steve Coogan? No.
I'm not that gay. Apparently ABBA's someone ABBA. Else likes things shoved down their damn throats too. But.
Just because I'm an ABBA fan? Yes. All right. So Miguel, what is your favorite drink to drink? Any beer? Any non-beer? Any alcohol? Any soda? What's your favorite? Or do you have a favorite?
My favorite drink? Dude.
Or one of your favorite drinks right now. What are you indulging in most of the time?
Son, I have hair on my nuts. I drink whiskey.
Here, here.
We were talking about Powers earlier today.
Yeah, unfortunately, they didn't have that at that goddamn liquor store.
That fucking damn assholes. Liquor store.
You said what's it was so them? Good.
Well, I was.
It is
was
pretty good.
It was recommended to me. Mm-hmm. And I was told the owner was a whiskey connoisseur, but apparently not.
Anything else? No, just Powers.
And my alternative is Crown.
Uh-huh.
And my alternative to that is Jim Beam. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I said, I got hair on my nuts.
So I have to drink whiskey. Nope.
Yeah.
It's good to have your options. High grade, low grade, you know?
How about your favorite beer? You don't drink beer, though.
Absolutely not.
No.
What do I look like? White trash?
There you did the sniff, you in white trash.
I thought I was on cocaine.
All right, so Miguel, you're not into beer. You like whiskey. Do you have a favorite drink that you like to make? Either for you or for people.
Yeah. You want to know what it is?
I do.
That's why we asked.
You see this? This is a...
It's made.
This is a shot glass. My favorite drink to pour for someone is just a glass and whatever they're having.
You know, I'll tell you what, that really makes your job at listening to music really easier.
Why do you think I like it?
This job is great. What's your favorite drink? I'd like
the
best at
St. Germain cocktail. Hired, we don't have any of those things. What do you want that fits in a shot glass?
When I got hired, I was told if you didn't know how to make it, you ask the person what's in it, and if they don't know what's in it,
they don't get it.
You shouldn't be drinking.
That's perfect.
They shouldn't be asking.
How come more bars aren't like that?
I completely agree.
I think that's straight rule on. Number one that we're going to have to put up on our site.
Yeah, cheers to that.
I think we should put some rules up on our site.
It's true. You know, you try and ask for like a White Russian, but you don't know if there's cream or not in it. And then you know, mm-hmm. Come on.
The big debate I've had with people recently is, do you shake or do you stir a White Russian? I personally prefer the stir. And I know quite a few customers prefer stirred. And I even had this one asshole was all like, when I was all like, yeah. I was like, would you like it stirred or would you like it shaken? Like shaken, that's the only way. And I'm like, no.
Like that's the way.
I know a few people that prefer to stir it.
I've never actually had a shaken one before.
I think it's totally weird.
It seems like it wouldn't get foamy because it's got cream in it.
A little. Well, it does. It bubbles up a little bit. It. You know what? It looks like. I've had many complaints from people about because one of my coworkers shakes it, and like, anyways, this asshole is just like.
You shake it like with the cream,
and I'm all like, "Oh, that's totally weird." He's like, "Well, I don't think so."
Yeah.
So, what's your opinion on that whole concept of the customer's always right, running a bar or you know working at a bar?
The customer is never right under any circumstances.
Doesn't apply at a bar,
not,
does it?
Not even the customer is always wrong. It's just they're just not right.
They're just picky assholes.
It's like, I serve your drink. Done.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't even think it applies. I think it applies across the goddamn board. People are too sensitive about stupid shit. Now, granted, we as individuals can take advantage from, like, corporations on these things. Like, take, for example, I got my room comped in Vegas this past week. Mm-hmm. When we showed up, there was a fucking used Band-Aid attached to the side of the fucking bed frame.
Oh, no.
How fucking nasty Gross. Is that? It's like I call downstairs.
That's
like,
not supposed to be there.
I call downstairs. I'm like, I'm ready to relax. Can you just move me to another room? And they're like, we have nothing left. Or like, we have something on the first floor after being on the 28th. I'm like, you're going to fucking downgrade me?
Yeah.
So, well, we have nothing else in your price range. Well, give me a second. And then I talked over with my friends. So I called back and I'm like, all right, just send somebody up to fucking clean the Band-Aid, take off and clean the sheets and all that shit.
Did they like a Band-Aid cleaner person?
The maid.
The maid.
The Mexican lady.
just should be noted that Miguel is both gay and Mexican, so everything that he's saying, he has way more right than anybody who thinks he has.
Automatically.
Like,
I mean, it's not my fault they call me Mr. Miguel. Anyways, so then they're like, no, no, don't worry about it. We're going to send our manager who upkeeps housekeeping to go inspect the room and tell you what, tell us, you know, what we should do. And, you know, I'm trying to get down to the pool. It's only open for a couple more hours.
Okay.
Half an hour goes by. Motherfucker showed up and I'm infuriated. And I call back downstairs. I'm like, look, fucking just send somebody to clean my goddamn room.
Mm-hmm.
Go down to the pool, come back, and the Band-Aid's still there. Like 2.5 hours later, I flip and I call
the
back.
The Band-Aid is still there.
I mean, I know it's just a Band-Aid. And I know, it's not and just I know a this Band-Aid is totally anymore. Just nitpicking. But yes, at this point, it's like me versus them.
Me, you versus the Band-Aid.
Yeah. Eventually, they sent somebody up and they comped us our room. But, you know, like I was saying, you know, the customer is always never right. In this instance, I probably was not right. In reality, I could have just taken a tissue paper, picked the Band-Aid off the side of the bed, thrown the trash can, and called it a day.
Yeah.
But, you know, I chose to be a picky cunt.
So there you have it. Next time you go to Vegas, bring Band-Aids.
I was going to say, moral of the story is... They're not going to check the DNA.
Anyways, what were you guys saying?
We were asking what's your favorite drink to make, and then you said something about the customer being
No,
wrong.
I said that it's pouring a shot. I said, you know what? Right. Pouring a shot or pouring a beer, opening a beer, I don't fucking like making drinks.
Mm-hmm. All right,
who the fuck likes making drinks?
So that's your favorite one to make?
Who the fuck, in their right goddamn mind, likes to throw some fucking... mint in a goddamn fucking thing and muddle the shit out of it, throw the sugar, throw all the fucking ingredients. Take five minutes to make one asshole their goddamn cock. Who the fuck likes that? No.
I'd
nobody
say probably
likes
a
that.
Whole culture, but
No.
I was gonna say
a
hold
whole
on
culture
though.
Of consumers.
That Bacardi
the bartender
commercial?
Himself
I'll give you
is
that.
Probably a miserable prick sitting there. And
that
like,
Bacardi commercial made it look like the dude loved making mojitos, but I think that was a lie. But Miguel, you bring up a really good point.
Unless you compare the competitive assholes, but those assholes are just pricks and
those are show. That's a show. It's
yeah,
not, yeah,
yeah.
So
those guys don't count.
You bring up, up an incredible point though. That like, while being a bartender, it might be a fun job in some aspects, but making all the drinks, not your favorite part of the job.
Not true.
No,
not true at all. Vodka cranberry. Oh yeah, no problem. Rum and coke, no problem. Whiskey coke, no problem. Gin and tonic, no problem. You know what the key is with all of them? Two ingredients.
Yeah, that's kind of what. Yeah, that's what we were going for with our your favorite drink to make that has two or more ingredients in it.
Your base and your fluff.
Yeah, no, that doesn't exist. Anything after two involves effort.
Right.
And who the hell wants to put effort? The only effort I want to put in is cheering with a shot with a customer. That's the only effort I need to put.
Isn't this the kind of bartender you want, though?
You know what? I mean, I could totally agree with it if I want that, and that is definitely what a lot of people want. You know, if you go to that certain bar
See,
and
now,
you want...
I'm not saying that's the best way for me all the time, because everybody who's been around me knows that I like a Blue Hawaiian blended, but...
We get fired for blenders at our bar.
Certain bars don't have it, right? But here's the point is, I think at least at the very base of it, though, Miguel's got a really good point. If you can't enjoy the liqueur or liquor or whatever you're ordering by itself...
Well, it's true. It's like you want to go to a bar and have a nice drink? Go to a different bar. We're all about, you know, clinking glasses. We're all about...
Well, and
I work
a nice
for
drink,
a biker bar.
A nice yeah. drink...
The fuck would you expect from a biker bar?
You don't need to mix anything with Macallan 12 to make it delicious. It's good on its own.
Exactly.
You need to mix it with your life.
Yeah. You mix it with stories and friendships.
And how that friendship escaped you.
Macallan 12 goes best with handshakes and stories.
I wanted to ask you what your ideal bar would be to have. Like, if you...
Oh.
Where to run a bar, or at least a bar that you can go to, and then just be very, very, very content.
Number one, the music could not suck, and that's a priority. I'm very particular about that. Very particular about that. See, like, one of my favorite bars in the city is Bender's. That's because they have an amazing jukebox.
Really good burgers to boot, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Great food. Great times. Mm-hmm. That's my favorite straight bar in the city. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can go hang out there anytime. Anywho, music is a priority to me. A good bar has good tunes, variety, eclecticness.
A lot of factors.
Secondary to me, personally, maybe decor. I don't know. It all depends what you want. Like, some people want to just set up a nice area for people to go drink at. And, like, you can do that and not be too fancy. Like I said, like, the hole in the wall is a complete art deck. You know, it's like my boss's, like, art gallery.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's like everything that he's designed and put up there. But, like, you know, it fits for what it's, you know, themed as. Like this is what you expect when you come in here. Versus like a place at Bender's where, yes, they do have art on the wall, but it's not as overwhelming as the hole in the wall or overwhelming as, what's the place in Oakland?
Oh, Van Cleef's.
Or overwhelming like Van Cleef's.
We're gonna be doing an interview with one or two of the guys from Van Cleef's here in the next couple of weeks, too.
Fabulous bar, by the way. Now, you know, you said that how I don't like making cocktails. Well, I don't mind going to other bars and ordering fucking a good cocktail. Like, that's one thing. Don't get me wrong. I don't like to do it, but fuck, if someone else can get paid to do it, fuck it. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
They have the most amazing greyhounds. Holy shit.
They do. They squeeze all the grapefruit right there in front of you on a press.
And you know what? That's not that's not the only thing they do that's amazing. Fuck, one time one of their bartenders made this like whiskey and plum drink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was so fucking righteous, dude. It's not even funny.
And most of the other thing, notably, and we'll get to this more when we interview some of them, but most of the people who work there are part of a family.
So I guess what you can say is, I mean, not to have a perfect bar, but something like San Francisco where you have options.
I wouldn't want to own a bar in San Francisco.
No, I'm talking about like going to other bars in San Francisco. Like you're so saying,
if you want that eclecticness,
you know what? You know what? Gay bars are pretty lame in this goddamn city.
I've never heard that from anybody. Tell me more.
Oh, God.
I'm serious. Like, I'm curious now.
Really? Mm-hmm. Gay bars in this city are lame. Because the majority of them are, like, fucking clubs. They're all these fucking, like, Madonna, Sylvester, Gaga, Black Eyed Peas. That's where it is everywhere. That's where it is everywhere.
That's how it is with straight bars, too, you know.
Yeah, that's true. It's a very good point to bring
up. That's horseshit.
Not all of them.
That's horseshit because
I'm overly generalizing there.
If that's true for you.
That is not true for me.
He's hanging out in the
room. Exactly. You don't know what it's like to go drink on, like...
So you've already answered 4 of our 5 questions by talking about Bender's being one of the bars you like to go to around town, and then what your ideal bar would be like. Do you have a drink you've invented or you hardly ever see anybody make that you think is kind of unique?
No, but when broads come in and ask me for something sweet, I just make them a Jolly Rancher.
It's a Jolly Rancher.
Apple schnapps, peach schnapps, and a splash of cranberry.
I might like to try a Jolly Rancher next time.
It tastes exactly how it sounds. Mm-hmm. It's my default go-to.
Cool.
Yeah.
We had...
You want to hear one of my favorite quotes from The Hole in the Wall?
Yeah.
It was from one of my coworkers. I won't say exactly who.
Rhyme with rat?
No.
What about Harry?
Maybe. He walks up to one of our customers. He's all like, "I feel a little indifferent about breaking up a blowjob in the bathroom." when I walk in the bathroom and there's a blowjob going on, I'm like, "This is exactly me, tone for tone." Now, guys, you know you're not supposed to do that. I'm going to ask you guys to get off your knees and pull your pants up.
And this is like one of those nonchalant things.
I'm just going to walk out of here. And you just need to not do that. And if I catch you again, you're going to be in trouble.
hey, stop.
Although,
don't at him.
Although I will say this. I will say this to fuck with people. The fuck with people who have been, like, giving blowjobs, like, in front of us. Like, not even the bathroom, but, like, in front of the bar, mm-hmm. against the wall. My favorite thing to do is pelt them with ice.
How many different ways do you have of breaking up a blowjob?
I have my fair share.
Pelting with ice.
Telling them to stop.
Telling
in the
them
bathroom.
To stop.
Telling, well, besides telling them to stop, pelting them with ice, accidentally kneeing them as I walk by.
Ooh, that's a good one. That'll
well, you
get
know,
their attention.
You know, you trip over them because they're on their knees. They're interrupting the bar.
It's easy.
One of the most awful things I had to do is I had to tell somebody that was being tied up, you can't have your guy on the floor. He's being tied up all the way on the floor. And like,
oh my God,
I had just picked up broken glass within centimeters of wherever this guy was like laying down. Like, I'm just like,
pretty sure this is breaking some health codes.
Yeah. You need to like stand up and not lay down on the ground. No.
Wow. Well, it sounds like Hole in the Wall is the bar to party at.
There's a lot of bars like that. God, if I, you know, I'm not the one you want to interview for that one. You could have a whole field day with half of the people, half of my customers on Folsom about Folsom and what Folsom was and what it is and like
where it's
wow.
going.
Wow. I don't know about where it's going, but I'll just tell you
nobody
this. There
does.
There was over 15 gay bars in the Folsom area prior to AIDS in the 80s. Now, with the stud, there's...
Six?
Five. One of the bartenders, the Powers, actually developed a board game off of all the old places in Folsom.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty freaking awesome. We have a copy of it on the wall in the
Is
back
it like doing toward... the Miracle Mile kind of thing where you have to hit X number of bars in X number of time? Or number
I don't know
of
if it's X number
Is
of bars.
Is it like Jumanji?
With a bunch of leather daddies that pop out of the out of space.
And wild animals and Robin Williams.
Miguel, as a bartender, you have any lessons for all of us who are patrons?
Yeah. When you send your women to go get drinks and they sit there in front of the fucking well and they yap 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 amongst themselves, and you're just sitting there basically slamming a glass down in front of them, screaming at them, what the fuck do you want? And they ignore you until you decide to go 2 feet over to the person who is actually waiting and wants a cocktail, only to hear them say like, ugh. Yeah. Fuck those bitches. You know, if I have one thing to advise, like, just fuck those bitches, dude. They ain't got nothing that you need that's worthy, and it ain't fucking worthwhile, so don't even fuck with that shit. That's the one thing that I have to say, if I could say anything at all. Thank you all. Have a fabulous fucking morning.
Miguel just dropped his mic and walked away.
And there you have it.
Famous words from our buddy Miguel from over at Hole in the Wall. Thanks again, buddy.
Well, that was our interview with Miguel. Quite fantastic it was. Back to you, Jason and Tom.
That does it for this episode. Jason, what did we learn today?
I'm not sure if we learned anything, Tom. yeah, we did.
Whether or not we learned anything, hopefully someone listening did. Things like expensive Australian wine might fetch as much as $170,000 US.
That's crazy.
Also that Oregon craft brews brought in over $2 billion to the state in income last year.
That is neat.
And finally, we learned that no one really knows how many shots of Hennessy it takes to bring a bitch back to your place.
Priceless.
In our interview with our buddy Miguel, we learned that how many times are customers really right?
Never, apparently.
Always never.
That was a very unique and interesting interview, to say the least. So we have Unibrew.
Unibrow?
Unibrow.
Unibrow?
Excellent beer. And then we had our Sazerac rye.
Mmm, spicy.
Very spicy. Very vanilla-y.
Mmm, spicy.
Very spicy.
Went very well with all the bitters and the herb saint into our Sazerac cocktail.
Mmm, very good indeed.
And then we ended with a recap.
And that about wraps up our recap and consequently this episode.
Drink Drink Drunk Podcast is a production of Jason and Tom. Go to DrinkDrinkDrunkPodcast.com for details on events, photos, links, contact information, and a plethora of other goodies. As always, please drink responsibly.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Nice Sazerac! On behalf of Jason, Tom, and everyone else here at Drink, Drank, Drunk, the podcast, we remind you, if you're going to drink something good!
Clocks have two hands.